Hi, everybody, and welcome to Scientists and Tech, a mini-series on DTNS. I'm Dr. Nikki Ackermans, and for our final episode today, I will talk to Dr. Georgi Chenchev, a plasma physicist at the University of Antwerp, and also head of a startup called D-Carbon. He explains what plasma is and how he uses it to break down greenhouse gases. We also talked about how to build your own plasma reactor, which you should not do at home. Okay, now it's recording. So go ahead and introduce yourself and what you do.
All right, I'm Georgi Trenchev, postdoc at the University of Antwerp and CTO of the startup D-Carbon, where we use plasma technology to convert carbon dioxide into useful gases and materials.
Let's start with the startup. And in very simple ways, like, how did you come up with this, and what's plasma and what's going on?
Okay, but then you might have to cut the pieces and get them together. I don't know. I'll try to have a better story now, because to be fair, I didn't think about it. let's say like this. Plasma is the way nature converts energy into matter. Or okay. Vice versa, the otherwise. Every process that you see, every major process that you see in the universe, star formation and degradation, this is essentially plasma transforming energy into solids or materials or matter and back, or while releasing radiation in the form of light or heat.
What does it look like?
Well, what it looks like when you see the sun, this is a giant ball of highly heated plasma.
It's a good example.
A process. And in this process, you see matter being converted into energy, and that's how we get the radiation from the sun, light and heat.
Sure.
Why I start with this is because that's what we want to do in D-Carbon. We want to use plasma to convert gases into other materials or other gases by using electrical energy that converts it.
So you're trying to take like these harmful gases out from the atmosphere through some kind of filter?
Yeah. Well, the plasma is a converter. So we have carbon dioxide, which is a greenhouse gas. And we can find it in many industrial processes. You can start with ammonia production, steel making, just general combustion processes. And when you pick it up from there, you have to do something with it, because by itself, it's pretty much useless. Okay. However, if we convert it with plasma, we get carbon monoxide, which is a far more useful molecule. It has many applications in the steel making industry. For creating hydrocarbonic gases and some applications in plastics. And this gas as a commodity is very expensive. So what we want to do is to use this as an incentive to install this technology for carbon dioxide conversion to carbon monoxide. And the industry is seeing a lot of traction in this regard. So far, we've been hearing a lot about green hydrogen, and now the new talk is about green carbon monoxide.
And that's thanks to you.
Well, hopefully, but other companies are working on it as well.
You're converting the greenhouse gases with plasma. What's happening in this black box?
What's happening is that this greenhouse gas goes into the plasma state. What the plasma state is, when you put enough energy in a gas, the molecules inside, they start to disintegrate. Why? Because normally you have some stream of highly energetic electrons. And electrons are very small, but very fast. And once they hit a bond in some molecule, they simply disintegrate it. And you get a new molecule. So in the case of CO2, you get CO and one free oxygen radical. This free oxygen radical will later recombine with another one, form O2, and there you have it. You have carbon monoxide and oxygen as a result. Nice. And in the plasma, this happens very fast. So you have these highly energetic electrons just bombarding everything. But afterwards, once these molecules disintegrate, you have radicals as well. For instance, oxygen radicals, they're also very active. On their own, they also disintegrate a lot of molecules. So some people refer it as a chemical soup that is super active. And if you stir it in the right way, you get useful reactions.
That's a good metaphor. Yeah, I'm sure you're a little bit, it's not completely exact, but it's good for us non-physicists who have a very general grasp of how electrons
work. I can go into more details, but sometimes it's easier just to have the general concept. Because this general concept is applicable pretty much everywhere.
And so in your research that isn't the startup, are you also doing similar things? What kind of machines are you working with there?
I'm using plasma reactors. So these are atmospheric plasma reactors where high voltage is applied to a gas and then this gas transits to a plasma discharge. And where I'm working at is trying to optimize these reactors for higher energy efficiency.
So you're just blowing up gas all day long?
Pretty much, yes. So we are looking for ways to blow up more gas, as much as gas possible with the energy that we use. Because that's the crucial parameter, how much electric energy you're going to spend to disintegrate a certain amount of gas. The more you disintegrate, the better, of course.
And you're trying to make it efficient and
more,
worth your
more
while.
More efficient, yeah.
And so in my head, this looks like kind of a mad scientist setup where you have a lab coat and you're blowing up stuff and you go, ha, ha, ha. But actually it's all computer-based, right?
Well, plasma science relies a lot on computer simulations, yes, for a few reasons. These processes are extremely fast and extremely small, so measuring them accurately is quite challenging in an experiment. Mm-hmm. So you can measure the final result, but you don't know what happens in between. That's why we use computer modeling, which simulates the particle interaction in the plasma, all the electrons, all the atoms and molecules, and all these excited states and so on. And then we can have an insight of the parameters that control their behavior.
And then you can tweak them.
And once we have a working model, then this is a tool for engineering. We can now use it to design a reactor or a certain parameter in the reactor that we need and so on.
So what would you use a plasma reactor for in a real world setting?
In the real world setting, we would it would be just one chain block in the entire chain of the industrial application. So imagine that you have chemical processes that produces something and releases CO2, but that's usually not the case. You have other gases mixed in the stream, what comes out of the chimney. You might have sulfur, water vapor, carbon monoxide itself. You might have methane and nitrogen and whatnot. So there you need a capture stage that only captures the gases that you need to process. Mm-hmm. So we don't need to process nitrogen, for instance. We want to only process the CO2, so we need a capture stage. And that capture stage, that's an entirely different story. So that's, again, a chemical process that needs to separate the gases that you need, pressurize them, and send them to the equipment that is going to convert them. Now, that's a plasma reactor. Once a plasma reactor converts it, you go through another stage of separation because you end up with carbon monoxide and oxygen, right? So you need to remove the oxygen and deliver the pure carbon monoxide.
And that's also what your startup does. So it comes full circle, actually.
So what the startup wants to do, what the car wants to do is a full circle. So we want to complete the entire chain. And the plasma is just one part of it. The others have to come in from all sides and get together. And we have to align them in a way so that they work optimally.
Okay, I have a question. Georgi, when we met and I went to your apartment for the first time, you showed me and our friends that you had built your own little plasma reactor in your apartment. How does one build a plasma reactor and why are you so obsessed with plasma?
First question, it's actually very simple and a little bit dangerous. So you can order these kits on AliExpress, you have a small board where you have to build a high-frequency generator with two transistors. and then you have to supply it with some power. You can get some power supply. You can even use a laptop power supply. And then you have a small transformer. And these transformers were used before in these big CRT TVs to provide high voltage.
Okay.
And they're not in use anymore, but I think they're still in production. And one of these transformers is just, the first coil is wounded with a very thick wire coming from this generator. And the secondary coil, it's encompassed in plastic, but it provides a very high voltage. Put all of this in a box and you have a high voltage generator that can make plasma if you put two electrodes opposite to each other.
And so how much energy is coming out of that? I believe you said it's very dangerous.
That tiny thing, it produces about 50 to 100 watts of power. It's not super powerful, but it gives about 30,000 volts. So it can ignite plasma at a distance of about 1 to 2 centimeters. Now, high voltage is not the biggest problem here. It also provides a decent amount of current, 40 to 50 milliamps.
All right.
And there are ranges there. So 0 to 10 milliamps, I think it's not that dangerous. But then 10 to 50 is very dangerous because it goes throughout your body very well. Then over 100 to 500, then it just gives you burns and so on. There are tables about this. It's bizarre.
But if and at some point, it turns you to dust, right?
If it's too much, if you get struck by a lightning. But this little thing, I think it's just in the right range to kill you. So you have to be careful.
Okay. But so is lightning plasma?
Yes, lightning is also plasma.
All right.
So are stars or the aurora borealis. That's also plasma.
And is that what started your love for plasma? Like, what got you into this?
Yeah, I thought at the time I think I was looking for something that could provide more fundamental research than just basic electronics. Because I've been doing electronics for most of my life, and to be fair, I got a bit bored from just analog circuits and so on, and I wanted something else.
Something that could kill you easier.
More risky. Okay. Yeah.
Indeed. So if you've been working with electronics for so long and plasma, what's the coolest piece of tech that you've worked with?
The coolest piece of tech? Well, I get excited about high voltage power supplies, but they're not really that cool. I have to think, what's the coolest thing I've seen? If I have to stick to the world of plasma, it's a plasma-based processing machine that is essentially a very long tube that sprays plasma on a large surface. It doesn't look very spectacular. It looks like a giant printer.
Okay.
But what they do there is quite interesting because they feed it with a certain foil. So it's a plastic foil for packaging.
Okay.
Now, what they want to do with the foil is to transport it in very small sizes, like a sheet this big.
Like and an A5, A4.
I think so, yeah. But then they want to stretch it from all sides and make it 3 by 3 meters or something. So during transportation, takes less space, then you can stretch it. So what they do there is they treat it with the plasma because then somehow the fibers in this foil, they start aligning. So when it's in a small shape, they are like all over the place like this.
Tangled up.
Tangled up. And not only, it even leaks.
Okay.
More plastic. Once they stretch it, they make parallel lines and it becomes non-leaking anymore.
Wow, that's really cool.
It can actually hold air and everything. So
plasma is magic.
That impressed me quite a lot. Yeah.
I love all the things that scientists nerd out about in their own field that we would never know that really exist. What other closing statements about plasma would you want to state? And that was a really broad question, but you never know.
I would share an interesting story. Many people think that plasma is something highly technological and very advanced to work with. But actually, I am already pretty sure that second or the third invention with electricity was actually a plasma reactor of some sort. At the beginning of 19th century, people invented electricity as commodity, and it was available everywhere, but there wasn't much else mm-hmm. to do with it than just to put a light bulb somewhere and have light.
Yeah.
So they started filling tubes with certain gas and place two electrodes in it, and then you get plasma. And okay. Then people would think, to perform some processing with plasma, that must be very advanced. I mean, CO2 conversion with plasma.
Yeah, that's what I think.
That's super advanced. No, well, the first paper that was published on this topic is from 1875, I think.
It's Man.
In French. Yes. and it back then, the term plasma did not exist. They called it electrified gas of some
mm-hmm.
sort.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much French I could read. But they even put carbon dioxide in the plasma and they measured the conversion. And it was not even too far off. So the way they measured it, they enclosed everything in a glass jar and they put a balloon on top.
Mm-hmm.
And once the plasma ignites, it starts converting the gas. And for every CO2 molecule, when it converts, you get CO and O, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So two molecules, so one to two. And then, the balloon starts expanding because you have the gas expands. You have more molecules and more gas. And then they measure, it expanded this much. That's a conversion. And they describe the process even. And it's, I would say it's plus minus 20% accurate.
That's so funny. That really beats, like, you know, I always get upset when I thought I discovered something and I see that someone in the 80s discovered it. But for you, for something so technical, something from the 1800s where they just use a balloon, that must be humbling. If people want to find out about your startup and about you, where should they find you on the internet?
We mostly are active on LinkedIn. So our name is Deep Carbon. But it's styled like DCRBN
okay.
with a dash in between.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thanks again to Dr. Trenchev for coming on the show. That was our final episode of Scientists in Tech. And you can find me on Twitter at Ackermans Nicole. You can catch more science by listening to the Sunday Science Supplement on the Daily Tech Headlines feed and the monthly science news here on DTNS.